This is the Pressure Tested Podcast with Kelly Roberts.
Well, I think we have to change the paradigm of what we're telling our kids.
There is something to the networks. Men have mastered that, and women, I think, are still catching up to that.
We interview women who are changing the game in construction and beyond.
She thinks differently than all you guys. She's a female.
Today on the show, we sit down with Lori Welch of Woodwright Hardwood Floor Company. Lori, who has been the CEO for 9 years, shares her journey from homeschooling her children to leading one of the best hardwood flooring subcontractors in DFW. She's overcome a lot of adversity to reach where she is today, and we're ready to put her to the test. Lori, thank you so much for joining me today on the Pressure Tested Podcast. I'm super excited to have you. I just want to start from the beginning.
Sure.
So tell me what you majored in college and how you got to where you are today.
Majored in interior design at Murray State University, which is a tiny school in Kentucky. I actually was born in Murray, Kentucky, and then went back to go to college there, lived with my grandparents through college when I chose to go home, which wasn't all the time. but, you know, loved it, made my way there. I went to Baylor first and then UNT and finally settled in Kentucky. So, worked in Nashville right after I graduated at a furniture store, and then got transferred down to Austin and ultimately back to Dallas, which was felt like home to me.
So why interior design?
Why not? you know, that was, I graduated college in 1994, and that was like the typical MRS degree.
Okay.
But I truly loved interior design. Like, that's my passion. It was an art history minor, so okay. it worked out. I never wanted to have my own interior design practice necessarily, because I don't like the day-to-day relationships of dealing with residential kind of stuff. I always liked the commercial aspect, the big projects. But, you know, selling furniture in a retail furniture store, that I was doing the residential stuff. But I met Steve, my late husband. He actually came in after his divorce and needed furniture, because his wife got all the furniture. he didn't buy a stick of furniture from me, though.
Oh, my gosh.
But we went to dinner.
That's funny.
So, you know, it all worked out. That's how I, you know, met him and got into the business. But it was kind of meant to be. He was like, oh, we could do great things together. Come have dinner with me. And, you know, the rest is fairy tale romantic history.
Aw, that's really sweet.
It was very sweet.
So you guys got together after that. Tell me a little bit about that. Was he just starting the business then, or did he already own the business?
He already owned the business. Let's see, that was like 1996, I think. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Business started in 1985, so that was 1996. He started it with his uncle.
Okay.
And he had bought him out at that point, I believe. He was on a little in a little rented warehouse space down in the design district.
That was the design district before it was the design district.
It was scary down there back then. You needed to be carrying.
That's funny. I love that.
Yeah. You know, like, we went to dinner after our first date, and then the next time he invited me down to his office. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just, the rest is history, because we were together after that nonstop.
Okay, so he's already in the business. Do you immediately go to work for him?
No.
Okay.
So he was still very much in the building the business phase, so he wasn't taking the salary and not paying himself. So, I mean, like I said, he was recently divorced, and so everything he had, he put back into the business. So we were kind of making it on my little commission from the furniture store. It was lean times. Because, you know, the furniture store salesman. Nobody
likes those guys.
Nobody likes those guys, and they don't make a lot of money, so they're like hounding you.
Yeah, that's a grind, for sure.
It really was.
Yeah.
It was cool furniture, but the store's out of business now. So
was it done in the design district, too?
No, it was in Addison.
Okay.
Storehouse
furniture. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Addison also has a little furniture area.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. That's where I was. Went to dinner across the street at Fridays, and so I worked at the furniture store for probably 2 or 3 years after we started dating.
Okay.
Through then, and then we got married, and I went to work for him, and he fired me on the daily.
Why? Why would he fire you?
I mean, I probably wasn't a very good employee. I'd come to work when I wanted to and only did the things that I wanted to do, not necessarily.
Sounds great.
I mean, it was a great gig for me. And so, you know, at the end of the day, he was like, this isn't working out. Get your stuff. I'll take it to the car. And then the next morning, he'd help me bring it back in. And so it was not good for the business. I actually went to, we started the Austin branch of the business, and so I was going down there.
Okay.
And then we got a little disgruntled with the education system, so I decided to homeschool the kids, so I quit.
Talk to me about that. What did you get disgruntled about?
We tried private school in Waco, and it felt very entitled. And was not teaching my kids what I wanted them, you know, the kind of work ethic and the character that I wanted them to have. And so the other option was we lived in this tiny little town. I mean, the population is 102. It's tiny.
Yeah.
So K through 12 was in one building.
Oh, yeah.
There was like 70 kids in the school. I don't know. So that was just a little too small for me.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, yeah, let's try homeschooling.
Okay.
So we did that for a long time.
How long?
Gosh. I took them out of private school. They were in second and third grade. They're 16 months apart. Second and third grade. So about till Steve passed away in 2016. So Copeland was in seventh grade and Ransom was in eighth.
Wow. How did you figure that out? I mean, if somebody told me tomorrow that I had to take my daughter Emily out of school and be solely responsible for her education, I would be very concerned with that.
I was concerned. And it's a lot of pressure and a lot of, like, it's like mom guilt on a grand scale. Because, you know, it's always, am I teaching them enough? Are they learning enough? Are they getting it? And, you know, I'm not great with math and you want me to teach them long division? You know, that's not.
Yeah.
We kind of totally skipped Texas history.
It's not important. It's fine.
But they learned it later, so it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. They caught up. It's fine.
So, I mean, homeschool, you buy a curriculum and you teach the curriculum. You're not, like, out there making lesson plans.
That's good.
At least I wasn't.
Okay.
So there's tools to help you, but, I learned a lot right along with them.
So you're a stay-at-home mom, you're responsible for teaching your kids' education, and then what happens?
So stay-at-home mom on a ranch that's 90 miles south of Dallas.
Oof.
Steve has, we called it his bachelor pad, because he stayed in town during the week, because he'd be driving all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So he passed away in January of 2016, unexpectedly. It was a complete shock to every single person in the world. He was like the person you least expected to not be there the next day.
Wow.
So he had been battling cancer, and it just all went south really, really fast.
Wow.
So I didn't know what to do, except that I knew I had to keep the business going. For the people that were counting on him. Like, I couldn't not be there. I could have sold the business, but I couldn't have.
Right.
There were too many people depending on me. And, you know, it was Steve's legacy. I didn't want to disappoint him. I didn't want to disappoint my kids. Mm-hmm. And honestly, in hindsight, it saved me. You know, that feeling that I had to get up and do this and go to work every day and figure it out.
Yep.
It would have been a lot easier to stay in bed and pull the covers over my head and just cry myself to sleep.
Because he's only 50. He was 52?
52.
Wow. 52 is awfully young. My husband's 50. And when you first told me that story, I was like,
yeah,
I should be nice to my husband today because this is a crazy story.
It's a crazy story. And I was thinking about this, you know, doing the podcast last night. And I was thinking about, you know, I'm older now than he was when he died.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'd never thought about it that way. He was so young.
So young.
And had, you know, so much vision and so much in front of him. So
it's wild.
Yeah.
How did it go with the kids? I mean, not only are you taking care of your own mental health, then all of a sudden you're having to jump into a business that I assume you weren't very involved in.
No.
To take care of all their mental well-being because these people are depending on a paycheck. But then you have two kids at home. Mm-hmm. How are they dealing with it?
They're incredible. Truly. I mean, they just lost their dad.
Yeah.
And now we're not going to be homeschooling anymore. You're going to go to this tiny little school.
Oh, man.
And honestly, I mean, I think they were so worried about me being okay that they did whatever they had to do. Because, you know, now I'm driving back and forth every day, 90 miles each way.
Wow.
And, I mean, they're holding down the fort. We've got animals. We've got all of these, a ranch to take care of.
Wow. Okay, so there's animal. There's like, this is a real ranch.
Yeah.
This is not just a piece of land.
No, it was almost 60 acres.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, everybody pitched in, and we had help at the ranch. And, I mean, we just made it work. At the time, my parents lived across the road, so they were able to help, but that's a whole other... That's a whole other thing.
We're getting there. We're getting to that part.
But, I mean, they took it well. Unfortunately, I think they lost their childhood in it.
Man.
You know, I mean, they had to grow up right then.
Fast.
They were 12 and 13.
Wow. It's amazing just the human condition of not wallowing in something when you realize that there's someone else that depends on you.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly that can help you just jump in. I don't think everybody's born with that necessarily.
I don't think people
deal with grief very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are just going to shrink back and kind of only worry about them. But it's kind of amazing that you weren't like that and your kids weren't like that. And you guys have accomplished what you've accomplished since.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
Thank you for saying that. It didn't feel like a choice. It just felt like this is the right thing to do. This is what we need to do. And like I said, it saved me.
Yeah. So you get into the business. What do the people say to you? We're like, here's this stay-at-home
mom.
Hello,
Mrs. Welch.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the owner's wife here to... you know, figure this out. Like, what, did they have faith in you? What did they say?
It was kind of a mixed bag. The people at Woodwright completely embraced me. I mean, they knew I didn't know, you know, the technical part of it. They knew I didn't know really anything about how to run a business. I'd never run a business before.
Yeah.
But they held my hand and they were so patient with me. And, you know, they gave me time to learn. They gave me time to grieve. You know, when I needed a moment, I took it. I can remember those first few Monday morning sales meetings, and I would just, you know, have to put my head down on the conference table because it was just completely overwhelming. And they let me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You get so lucky with that. I think that not all humans are like that. So they must, but I also think that must say a lot about your husband and the team that he assembled and how much respect they had for him to have brought you in like that.
100%. He built this team of people around him that would go to battle for him.
Wow.
I mean, people that have been there for years and years. So.
How do you think he did that?
He had a way of bringing people close, like earning their trust. Like he would do things for them that would totally take them by surprise. Like he'd see one of the field guys struggling with his car, and he'd go out there and, you know, like look at it with him. And he was just one of those people that knew a whole lot about everything and could fix anything. And so he was a friend.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
He was a great guy.
I think that it's really difficult to be a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's difficult to assemble people around you that trust you sometimes. So that definitely speaks to his character on what he was. And it kind of sounds like he was just a regular person.
Absolutely.
You know, if he was willing to go outside and help somebody with their car.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. So you get in, you're in your sales meeting, and you're like...
My head's down on the conference table.
So kind of walk me through... Why at that moment you didn't just want to sell out?
I thought about it many times, But, you know, it would have been a fire sale. Mm-hmm. And I owed Steve more than that. Mm. And so at first it was, let's just get the company to a point that it's not a fire sale and we can do this and I can walk away. And because it's so funny thinking back over all the years of conversations that we had, Steve always said, if anything ever happens to me, sell the company. And, you know, maybe I should have, but I don't think so. I don't think so. It's grown and it's flourished, you know, probably not because of me more than in spite of me, but, you know, we've all learned a lot.
Okay, so you're in your sales meeting and you're thinking, what am I going to do? So you bring your dad in. Tell me about the decision to bring your dad in. Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. So brought my dad in. So Steve passed away in January. My dad had retired in December. So brought my dad in to help me. Longtime commercial banker. It was a really bad decision. He wanted everything to fit into a neat little hole. And, you know, we needed to sell this much wood floor per month at this rate. And it just doesn't work like that. You know, I mean, you can go 3 months without getting a contract and all of a sudden you've got three contracts and then you're, you know, assholes and elbows getting it done. And then, sorry, I hope that's
No, that's construction for sure.
And then, you know, it's another 3 months before you get any more contracts. So it's not, we need to sell this many per month. It's just, you take the work when you get it and you're out shaking the trees when you don't have it and you build the backlog and you make it happen. But you can't say, you know, I need to sell 1,000 feet of floor this month.
It's interesting because I was a CFO. And so that's very much how my brain works.
Sure.
How much feet of production can we get in? I mean, mm-hmm. I can be a glorified box checker. It's either it's black or it's white. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've really, you know, struggled just with the change from CFO to CEO because it's just such a different world. And it's a world that's so much more about being involved with what the people are doing around you and putting your relationship with those people and this idea of what the business could look like ahead of the black and white metrics of it. And that's a really difficult thing to do.
It
especially
is.
Like if you come from a world where it's like, no, every month I'm going to tell you if the business is winning or losing. Outside of that, you guys kind of figure it out to go into a position of, well, the business is losing, but I can't look at it like that.
Right.
I've got to look at it differently.
Wait for a couple of months. We're going to be doing everything we can, but this month we're red, and maybe next month we're red, but then we'll be really black, but then we'll be red again.
Do you think that, why do you think he struggled with that so much? Just because he came from a world of commercial banking, and I love all my commercial bankers. Kate Kennedy, I love you too.
Absolutely. But we love Kate Kennedy. Hi, Kate.
But there is a real situation where bankers can kind of be defined as box checkers. You know, you either fit the mold or you don't.
Absolutely. I mean, they're regulated so tightly. They have to fill these boxes. Yep. They have to meet the numbers or they get in trouble with whoever they get in, the examiners, I guess. So it's built into their psyche. It's just part of who they are. And to find a great commercial banker in construction is a needle in a haystack.
Oh, for sure. So how long was your dad in the business before you decided that it was a bad idea?
Gosh, it was maybe a year.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not long. And I mean, that was a whole other, between him and my mom, and I mean, it was a whole family thing, and you know, I started dating and they thought it was too soon, and man,
yeah,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that just generally speaking, working with family members is extremely difficult.
It's
we have a really crazy culture here where we have so many, you know, husband and wives working here.
Really?
So many cousins and brothers and sisters. My sister works for me. Me and my husband work together.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. You know, he actually works right across from me. We're moving to a different building, and the very first thing I said was, do not put him across the hall from me, because I'm not going to sit at work and stare at him every day. Like, I love my husband.
Sure.
But there's a serious, look, family needs separation.
Absolutely.
What you do every day is not necessarily what, you should not do that every day with your spouse and then go home, mm-hmm. and because it's difficult to turn off. And
it is.
My husband and I, we have a great relationship where we are able to turn it off, but it's, I mean, it could be a real struggle.
Well, I mean, sometimes you need to go home and bitch about what happened at work.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And when, you know, you're both at work, and mm-hmm. then you go home and bitch about work, you just never really escape it.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it.
It's hard.
We just hired a woman who, an HR woman, and she's fantastic. I don't know how I ever did anything without her before she got here, but you know, she's married to someone here, and I remember telling her, I said, hey, I love you, but this is tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to work with family. Because when it doesn't work out, that's your family.
Yeah. You know?
Those are the people you're supposed to be having Thanksgiving with.
Yeah. That makes it for a tough Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
You know.
When they're mad at you about work or... And visions rarely align between family,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Family's hard anyway. But then you put business with it, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, expectations. Like, my sister works here, and you know, sometimes I think that I treat her differently because I just get these expectations mm-hmm. for what I think she should be able to accomplish, or I think that her career trajectory should look exactly like mine, and if it doesn't measure up to exactly what I've done, I get angry with her. And it's like, wow, I don't have expectations like that for anybody else who works
right.
here. Why would I place all of those unnecessary expectations on somebody? It's probably like your dad. Your dad probably got in and thought, I gotta fight.
I'm gonna fix this.
Yeah. I'm gonna fight for my daughter. She needs my help. And it becomes so emotional. It's like when things become so emotional,
I'm not sure it was that, but.
No? What do you think it was? You think he's just a fixer?
Yeah, I mean, I think he wanted to come in and kind of take over.
Very good.
I mean, that wasn't ever going to fly. That was never in the plan. It was just a weird dynamic.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get through that. And kind of tell me about your management style. So you're obviously not somebody who's going to say, okay, we've got these metrics and we have to hit them. You know, how did you approach management? How did you get the company where it is today?
So management for me is not being a micromanager. Like, I didn't hire you if I have to, like, come in and tell you exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. I need you to do what you do. I hired you because you're a rock star. Come do your thing and tell me how it's working out. Tell me what you need from me, and I want you to go do your thing. However you do it, if you need to work from home one day a week, that's fine. but I'm not gonna, you know, ride herd over you the whole time. As long as you're getting your stuff done, I'm happy. So that's been my management style from the very beginning, and it's worked out for the most part. Things came to a head late last year, and I had to let go a guy that had been with the company from the very beginning.
Wow.
And that was so scary. I held on longer than I should have because mm-hmm. he'd been there for so long, and could we do it without him? And, you know, come to find out, yes, we can. So that was hard. But we're so much stronger for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture in the company since he left has been amazing because he was a micromanager.
Yeah.
And he kind of ruled with fear.
Ah.
And, man, that's not the company I want to run.
That's great. Yeah, it's those, I talk about that with Garrett a lot. I talk about that a lot, period, is how much time you spend on, you know, just dealing with people who aren't really working out. But mm-hmm. I had to let go of somebody Friday. And, you know, I am not normally super emotional. And, you know, she became very emotional when she was getting let go. And so then I became emotional. And it was really difficult because even when you know that maybe they're not the right people, you still get so close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want, especially if you know, and this is where, you know, the lines really blur, is when you know so much about what they've got going on in their personal life and you want to be able to help them.
Yes.
But, you know, like, I had to make a decision for the company. I had to put what was best for the company ahead of what was best for her. And, you know, I stewed on it all weekend because it's tough. It's tough to, those decisions are extremely difficult.
I think they're tough for everyone, but I think they're especially tough for women because we are such nurturers by nature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's what we do. We take care of people. We learn who they are, mm-hmm. and, you know, what makes them happy, what makes them tick. And we try to fix that, I think, for the most part. So it's really, that part of it is really tough to draw the line.
It is.
Because you do have to put the company first. Yeah. That's our job.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know that I'll ever, you know, I can usually see the point where I know that the company will do better without that employee. I can usually see that moment. It's just, it's funny how much you'll look the other way though, mm-hmm. until you absolutely have to deal with it.
Exactly.
You know, there were so many situations that were kind of red flags, and it's like, you know, I could have dealt with the situation months ago, but I just wanted it to get better. Mm-hmm. I wanted her to get better. Mm-hmm. I wanted to assume that, you know, if I had conversations with her, if I talked to her about this, that one day she was just going to wake up and magically be different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I don't think men do that, really. Like,
I don't think so, for the most part.
For the most part, either. Yeah.
But, you know, it always comes back to you can't want more for them than they want for themselves.
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one for me.
It's a tough one.
It really is. You know, I used to get so angry when people would say, and I'll get angry right now if somebody wants to say it. If Dave wants to say this right now, I'm going to get mad at him. But, you know, this like whole idea of like, oh, that's why we've never had a female president. You guys are, you're too emotional. You're too this. And it's like, I hate when people say that. Mm-hmm. But then I have those moments where I, you know, walk out of letting somebody go and I start crying. I'm like,
yes, damn it.
Why am I crying right now? I'm like, this is hormones. Like, go back off. I shouldn't be crying right now. But those situations are hard. And, you know, like, I'm okay with those situations being hard because at the end of the day, if those situations weren't hard for me, then I didn't give a shit.
Absolutely.
And I would rather go out caring and doing everything I can to help somebody than just not giving a shit.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
You know, I think being authentic and being vulnerable with your team, it knits you so closely together that, I mean, you're all rowing in the same direction and you're just pulling for the right thing. And I'm not sure that's something that a lot of men bring to the table. They're not comfortable being vulnerable. They're not.
Yep.
That's not the way they're wired.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's true. I mean, because, and, you know, it's funny because I've always been okay being vulnerable. I can remember a couple of, like, meetings where, you know, I'd get to a point where I knew kind of what the answer was for the business, and this was before I was really over dealing with mechanical like I am now. And I would, you know, I remember saying something in one meeting and basically getting told that I was going to bastardize somebody's plan and being like, you know what, if y'all don't want to listen to me about how we save this company, I'm not going to tell you. And I, you know, getting up and storming out, I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to, you know, it's so, and I don't know if that's maturity. I don't know if it's because I'm 35, but when I get so passionate about something, like, that's it, you know, like, I am angry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I have to figure out how to turn that into just passion that's productive.
A positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It really is. And it comes with age.
No, please tell me that. 'Cause I would love to turn 36 this year and, like, all of a sudden have my light bulb moment where, you know, it gets easier.
I think, honestly, I think it does. And I think that's not, you know, gender specific. You can, you know, think of all these hot-headed boys that mm-hmm. run around wanting to fight all the time. It comes with age. They're going to calm down. We're going to calm down.
Yeah.
We're going to, you know, be able to keep our emotions in check. Not always. And I don't always want to keep my emotions in check. But, you know, you can control the situation a little bit more. It's hard, though.
It is.
It's hard.
So how have you dealt with just not burning out?
I don't work a lot.
That's good.
Yeah. We bought a place in Colorado last September, so we go there, my boyfriend and I. We're engaged. We're not getting married. But he's a chef, and so, you know, I just unplug. I completely unplug. I have a team that can do it without me. I'm just there for structure and, you know, to kind of point where I want it to go.
Yeah.
We're trying a bunch of new things at the office with, you know, we're getting, not getting away from the installation side, but pointing more to the manufacturing and distribution side.
Okay.
So that's super exciting, and it's way less risky than what we've been doing as far as the installation.
Yep.
So super excited about that. We're reaching out to markets around the country. I've got Bree, who covers 5 markets. She's actually moving to Nashville in 3 weeks. She is such a rock star. And she covers Nashville now, Chicago, L.A., Miami, and there's one more, New York.
Okay.
So she's yeah, she's all over the place. So it doesn't really matter where she lives. So she's moving to Nashville, which is hard for me to let go. But she's been with the company, I think, 3 years. She's proven herself. I know her work ethic. So that's exciting. And then I've got Gretchen, who has been in Austin and San Antonio, and she's reaching out to some national markets as well.
These are your salespeople?
Yes.
Both females?
Both female.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Rick is my heavy hitter. He covers Dallas and Fort Worth, been with the company 18 years.
Wow.
He is a complete wood geek and will tell you that all day
cool.
long. He has so many words about wood.
That's funny.
But he's great. But so Gretchen's going to now do Portland, Seattle, and Denver, in addition to Houston and San Antonio and Austin, Oklahoma.
So you guys will go to those cities and do the big projects that you do here in Dallas?
We'll sell just the materials. We won't do the installation.
Okay.
Which is a totally new business model for us.
Yeah. What? Why? Why did you make that decision?
Because I think there's so much, there's no limit to the opportunity, you know? I mean, there's so, we can sell materials all day long in a much tighter space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just so excited. So we have the relationships with all the architects and designers here, like HOK and Gensler and Corgan, all the big guys that have offices and all these other that automatically gets us in the door. So it's a great idea.
Man, that's great. So how, okay, first question is, there are not a lot of entrepreneurs or owners or people who own businesses who also operate the business that would ever say, I feel comfortable not working all the time because I trust my team. So for all the other entrepreneurs out there, how did you get to that level of trust?
That's a great question, because you're not the first to tell me that. I would say, you know, completely vet the people that you're asking to do the work, you know, test them, give them free rein to show you what they can do, and let them prove themselves. And once they've proven themselves, back off, let go, let them do what they do. I mean, have checks and balances, but man, there's so much freedom in letting people do what they're good at and watching them soar and, you know, in the end, make money for you, make money for your company because they're doing what they love.
So I love that. I think that's fantastic. And I think that if all people felt that way, I think that they would all see faster growth in their companies, because I think, and you know, even myself, is I have to get out of people's way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if these, especially in heating and cooling, and I try to stay out of my main manager's way, and that's worked out really well for me in some situations, and it's knocked me on my ass in other ones, and that's okay. But you know, I sit down with these guys and I'm like, these guys know so much more about what they're what this business model looks like, what it takes, than I do. So the idea of me coming into this room and telling them exactly how they're going to do their job, one, they'll leave. They don't need a 35-year-old female telling them
Absolutely.
Something that they've been doing for 30 years, you know. And I noticed that when I just get out of their way and I trust them, such great things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I try to get involved in every single process and every dollar figure and every single thing that they just lose a lot of morale and they lose a lot of motivation because they assume that I don't trust them at that point.
Sure. Giving them that autonomy to make those smaller decisions. I mean, obviously don't give them the whole deal.
Yeah.
But I think that most people will rise to that.
I do too. And, you know, something that I've always tried to do as a manager, because I've been in situations where I felt like my opinion didn't matter, so I always ask people what they think. I never sit down at the executive meeting and tell, you know, Bobby, hey Bobby, this is exactly what I hit the thing. See, I'm always talking with my arms and
just
moving around.
Like this.
I'm always talking with, it's actually really fun. I'm gonna tell you a side story. But me and Garrett and Haley and Gray, so Garrett and Haley are business partners, will always go out to eat. And we'll always get set at some real small table. And me and Haley will start drinking champagne. And we both will get super animated with our hands. And Garrett and Gray, the whole time, and for whatever reason, we both will take our champagne glasses. We'll sit them right there. And they're like,
oh, no. Bah, bah, bah,
bah. And literally, Garrett and Gray will just get real quiet. And they'll just, I'll just notice that they just keep moving our champagne glasses away. Because we're just both talking.
That's hilarious.
Okay, total side note. But and now I have no idea where I was going.
I don't know what we were talking about.
Trusting people. Okay, here's my next question for you, because I thought that this was super cool. You told me that you were hiring a president or a CEO.
I'm still the CEO.
You're the CEO. Good. Love that.
Yeah.
So you bring in a president.
Yes. So I hired him in October of last year, Reed Freimeyer.
Reed Freimeyer. Any relation to the Freimeyer HVAC?
That's the one.
Okay. Very good.
So long history in Dallas in construction, HVAC, all the things. He was a referral from my family office guys, and I think they went to college together or knew a girl in college or something like that. Anyway, they're big golfers, and John Craven said, you really need to meet Reed Freimeyer. And, you know, I knew the Freimeyer name, I was like, there's no way this guy's going to want to come work for my Littlewood Floor Company. And he did.
That's great.
And he's a rock star.
That's awesome.
And he is somebody that I can really trust, and just handing it over, knowing that he's doing all this great work, putting processes in place, and like he's an industrial engineering. He teaches at A&M on the side. And,
wow.
He's just a really good fit for the job. And I'm so excited.
When did you decide that that's what you wanted? That you wanted to focus on bigger and better, and you wanted somebody to run the day-to-day? What prompted that?
So the day-to-day to me, I don't know how to put in a wood floor. I don't know the technical aspect. I don't have to. I've got people that do that, just like you were saying.
Yeah.
I like big picture. And so when this idea of selling materials nationwide kind of came to our team, we kind of fleshed it out together, and I was like, this is what I want to concentrate on. This, I want to point the company in this much bigger direction.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't do both. I can't do the day-to-day, and I can't do the big visions work. And so that's where hiring a president came in.
That's great. I love that it's okay that you don't have to do both. A lot of people really limit themselves by thinking that they need to be in every aspect of the business, when really the best thing for that business would be for each person to focus on what they're good at. So do you follow Traction or EOS, any of that?
I do.
So that's the whole premise behind Traction is the, and this is my fuzzy brain because I had a back procedure today and was under general anesthesia this morning. Now I can't think of what I'm trying to say. But it's this idea of, you know, there's a visionary and an integrator. And the visionary gets to have the big ideas, but they are not the people that put together the processes. They're just not capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me and Garrett have really worked through that, where he's a visionary. He is. Like, no one on the planet has bigger ideas than he does. I'm certain of it. But get those ideas out and let me figure out how to get them integrated, because that's what I do. I don't have these big ideas. Like,
sure.
I wish if I had big ideas, I would be a billionaire right now. I don't have big ideas. I just don't. You know, I look at the world and it's kind of black or white, you know, so you tell me your idea and I can figure out how to make it work.
Absolutely.
But I'm not the person with the idea.
That's
never going to be me, and I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to be that person. So that's why me and Garrett work really well together. But
sure.
The hardest thing about Traction is trying to convince someone that's okay. That it's okay to just be the visionary and trust other people to put the rest of it together. It's tough.
You know, I did Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses, and one of the things they stressed in that program was you need to spend a certain percentage of your time working on the business mm-hmm. instead of working in the business. And I mean, I think people get so bogged down in the day-to-day and working inside the business and making sure everything is working the way it should that they miss the big picture.
Yep.
They miss the idea. Even if it might be there, they can't see it because they're so busy over here.
No, I agree. That's me. You know, I'll lay in bed at night and I'll say, all right, I need to get more into the business. I need to wake up in the morning and see the crews leaving with the equipment. I need to get in that warehouse and figure out how I'm going to do my inventory system. And I just get all, you know, I want to see it all. I'm like, I'm going to get on the schedule board. I'm going to get on the schedule board right now and see what's going on. You know, it's 9 o'clock at night. I'm like looking at the schedule board and I'm like, hi, you know, I pay people for this to mm-hmm. already have all this stuff done. And I remember years ago, I had this boss. I was super young and mostly an asshole. And I remember he would stroll in, you know, once a month and look at the schedule board and decide that we had it all wrong. And within 24 hours, he wouldn't look at it again for another 3 weeks. And I remember one time I was just young enough and enough of a bitch to be like, oh, he's going to look at it one day and never look at it again. He overheard me say it, of course.
Oh, no.
You know, I've calmed down a lot since then. I try to keep my thoughts to myself on stuff like that. But, you know, it's funny because now as a leader, I'm like, oh, I wonder what's going on the schedule board. And it's like, oh, stop.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. You know, people hate that guy.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you get, you know, especially because I'm in an interesting situation where I do have a boss that I'm a minority owner of the company. He's a majority owner. So I report to a boss, you know, even as the CEO, I report to somebody. Sure. And so you get, you know, well, if I don't have my hand in everything, then something's going to go wrong. And it's leadership and management is tough.
It is.
It's the toughest thing that anybody will ever do. Like if I didn't have people, like I always say that, and that's ridiculous, but I'm like, I could get so much done if I didn't deal with people problems every day. But
it's the truth. I mean, I think that's the hardest part of any kind of management position is, I always call it police in the sandbox, and maybe that's derogatory, and I shouldn't say that. I apologize.
That's actually really funny.
But I mean, that's what it is. It's making sure everybody's playing nice with each other.
Yep. Yeah, it's a grind mm-hmm. for sure. Okay, so you and I, we were at a golf tournament one time, and we were chit-chatting, and I said that I really get annoyed. So, and it's so funny because somebody sent me one of these today. I really get annoyed at this idea when people reach out to me and they want a remote internship. And, you know, they're HVAC designers or they're, you know, I don't care. They're college kids and they have no idea what the world's like. And they want to work remote. It irritates
it's
the
crazy.
Piss out of me. Why do they do that?
I think maybe COVID trained everybody that every position could be remote. I don't know. it's insane to think that that's a possibility. I mean, I really think there's something to be gained by going into an office and learning how to play in the sandbox.
That's exactly right.
And you know, reporting directly to someone in person and collaborating. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great tools for life.
I agree.
And there's so much missed out when all you've ever done is work remotely.
That's what I tell people, you know, especially because I was over a bunch of accounting people and, you know, accounting people can work from home,
mm-hmm.
but I would tell every one of them the same thing. I don't care if you work from home. It's totally fine, but you will miss it because things happen here really fast.
Yep.
And if your goal is to one day have a seat at the table, you're not going to get that seat by sitting at home.
Oh, so true. I need to see your face.
Yeah, I need to see your face.
We all need to see your face.
We need to learn together. We need mm-hmm. to grow together. We need to hear your ideas. If I have to jump on a Zoom call every time, you know, for an idea, that's
sure.
that's tough because things move super
sure.
fast.
How much is lost in a Zoom call? I mean, we can all say grace to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, Lori, thank you so much for coming on
this
my podcast
was so
today.
Fun.
I appreciate it so much. I'm so excited to see where Woodright grows. Let's check back in a year. I can't wait to hear how the manufacturing stuff is going.
I can't wait to tell you.
Thanks.
Kelly.